Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in to the Women Truckers Network, the first trucking radio program hosted by real women truckers. The Real Women in Trucking is a 501c6 driver organization whose mission it is to deliver highway safety through leadership, mentorship, education, and advocacy. You can learn more about becoming a member at www.realwomenintrucking.org.
Woo! Okay. Hi, everyone. This is Desiree. You're listening to the Women Truckers Network Blog Talk Radio. And like we said, it is the first and only radio program hosted by real women truck drivers. Know the difference. We are in our fifth season now. We had to take a break because we are working drivers and it's hard to know when we are going to be sitting. For instance, today, I thought I wouldn't have to drive till this afternoon for an evening delivery, but I had a problem with my wheel hub yesterday, which made me have to give up two loads. And now I just stay put for the radio show and have to look for a load after this. So it's, you know, sometimes we just couldn't do it. So we're trying to get back on it. Next week, we're going to have a really great show. We are going to be announcing the Queen of the Road winners on our show next week. So we will be putting that up shortly. We're very excited to announce those winners. Real Women in Trucking is a 501c6 membership organization. And we have been talking about entry-level truck driver training since we were founded almost 10 years ago now. It was as a result of the inaccurate information that recruiters use to lure people into the industry unprepared. And many of the bigger fleets that are just really doing a horrible job of training, and a lot of people were being hurt as a result of it. Not just women, men as well, told wrong information about what the job entailed, how long they'd be away from home, how much money they would make, getting them into one-sided lease programs, and then not being able to pay the bills at home because they're always paying for the truck. So many different things. And then when you have the fleets that are doing the two team driving students, which has the student thinking they're going to be coming to the company to learn, and then the trainer who is not making as much money as they thought they were going to make, so now they're training. Very few of them are doing it because they have a love of teaching other people. They're doing it because they are trying to make the money that they thought they were going to make. So there's some resentment there. Sometimes there's some control issues there. There's over-recruiting. There's bringing more people in than the company can accommodate. It's very greed-based. And in that mess is where you find a lot of the allegations of sexual harassment and sex assault and violence. There have been cases where a co-driver killed the co-driver. There's been a case where the trainer killed the student killed the trainer. There's a lot of stuff going on in the training fleets that the public does not know about. So our show today has to do with the Diane Sawyer program, Hidden America, that came out this last week on sexual harassment in invisible industries. And one of them is our industry, trucking. Trucking was not the primary focus of the Diane Sawyer show. It had segments on a woman who is a local delivery driver from FedEx, and it had a segment on trucking, women truck drivers. It had a segment on waitresses, and it had a segment on domestic housekeepers at hotels and motels. So I was on the road when the show came out, and I didn't get to see it until last night in its entirety. I got to see the trucking segment on the internet a few days after it aired live, but I did look at the Twitter timeline as it played for its showing there on television, and it had the hashtag #ABC2020. And the one thing that I was struck by right away was the compassion that people who were viewers of the show had for the waitresses and for the maids, and regret that they had not known about this issue before and just didn't realize what these individuals were going through at work. There was a couple comments about the truck drivers, but just a small fraction. There were zero from women truck drivers supporting other women truck drivers who spoke up. That's part of our problem, and that's part of what has to be in our solutions, and we're going to talk about that more in a moment. The show, I think it did a pretty good job of covering all of the areas. It talked a little bit about the training. It didn't talk about why it's happening. And one of the reasons it's happening is because of poor recruiting and poor preparation for the students who are entering the industry. Those are huge factors. So when you look at the show and you see some of the portrayals in there, you have to know what you're looking at. What I've found since I've been talking about sexual harassment in trucking since, you know, almost 10 years ago, is that women who have learned how to drive from their husbands, a brother, an uncle, a mother, a family member, they have a completely different experience than the people who have been affected in the recent 10 years, 15 years since the truck driving school phenomenon has appeared. There's some studies or scholarly articles, small ones, that talk about the experience of a single woman, very different from a woman who's in a relationship when they enter trucking. It's like comparing apples to oranges. It should not be done. It is a completely different thing. So we heard from, you know, women who learned from their husband and then they work for ATA, big ATA company, and everything's hunky dory, and life is wonderful, and all of that stuff. But there are people that are being hurt, and there is an awareness that in this industry that a lot of people have been hurt for a long time, but it's hardly ever written about. It's become sort of an urban myth. There's a lot of attacking of one another, and I'm gonna read you a couple of things that we had here, and I'm gonna turn on Idella's microphone. Here we go. Idella, are you with me there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Are you able to talk for a moment, or?
Yeah, I can. We're trying to find this place, but I'm gonna put John in the seat and I'll move over here. Never mind.
Well, I just... Okay.
Yep,
well,
I can talk.
Okay, so very quickly, did you get to see the segment?
No, I haven't got to see the segment, but I have read all the comments and all the thoughts on it. And I do know that they did not focus completely on drivers, that it was maids and waitresses and stuff, but... basically the same situation, I would think.
Different locations, but kind of the same. You know, you're isolated. You're perceived to be an invisible worker that nobody cares about. Maybe not, you know, somebody that you can take advantage of a little bit, and naive. And so, what from reading the comments, what do you think?
What I got from all the comments and all the emails I've seen, and it was anywhere from I've been in the business 2 years, I've been in the business 5 years, I've been driving truck 20 years, and it's never happened to me. And it's the attitude, I'm getting the drift that because it didn't happen to me, I don't think it exists. I haven't seen it, so therefore, out of sight, out of mind.
And a complete and utter lack of compassion.
A very lack of compassion. And another thing, thread that I got on occasion was, well, you know, she wasn't paying attention. Maybe she didn't look around. Maybe she was wearing the wrong kind of clothes. She wasn't being professional. If a man's hit on the head or raped, and the men are raped in this business, it has no gender. And yet nobody says, well, he wasn't wearing the right clothes, or he wasn't paying attention. Oh, poor guy. You know, wait a minute. Let's quit the victim bashing and get with the program.
Yeah. Yeah. We really, and I did a little experiment this weekend on this. You know, I posted, I went to a truck stop, and a tractor had caught on fire, burned half the engine compartment out and half of the bunk out of it, but the fire originated from the tractor next to it that had a bunk heater fire, and it melted that tractor all the way to the ground. It was quite a sight to see it. So I posted the pictures of it, and I posted them about 20, well, I don't know how many minutes after I posted those pictures, after I put up the clip from the Diane Sawyer program. And the Diane Sawyer program brought out of the woodwork women attacking victims who don't know anything about their story, who don't know anything about the waitresses, the maids, the particulars, nothing, just bashing. I've been doing this. They must have been. I would have done this. This is what they should do. They should. It's disgusting. It's really disgusting. It's embarrassing. I didn't see that from any of the other industries. I saw groups of women mobilizing behind the other industries. In this one, just absolutely coming out swinging at the victims. At the same time, the pictures of the burned out trucks, oh, that poor thing. I hope he got out alive. Thoughts and prayers. You know, where'd this happen? Oh, my goodness. Oh, I was tagging each other, all of this concern. So this is where we really, really have a problem in this industry. So I wrote a post about a little bit about it, because we did consult with ABC 2020 on the show. We gave them a lot of contacts. We gave them a lot of information. There are studies from the University of Kentucky on violence against long-haul truck drivers. There's studies about domestic violence in trucking. I sent them a number of different projects that have come out of the University of Kentucky. Some have been in the last 10 years. Some have been in the last 5 years, that have some recognizable trucks mentioned in them, and stuff. But that was kind of disregarded. We introduced them to a lot of emails that we get. We introduced them to a previous grant that Witt had tried to get for a driver crisis line years ago. I have a copy of it.
I sent that to them with a letter of recommendation from the Walmart guy with that has some very curious remarks in the letter. The driver crisis line solution was an idea that we had years and years ago when we very first started this group that was stolen. And I had a problem right away, not just because Witt stole the idea and started peddling it around, and the evidence is this driver crisis line grant document that I have and that I sent to the producers, is that why would you want to report a rape or an assault against you to the person who is a partner or a corporate member of their organization? That's like going and telling the fox that there's foxes in the hen house. It's ridiculous. It's a conflict of interest. It's very problematic because a lot of these companies, even if they do have a policy, they're not standing by their policy. They're not teaching their policy. And the enforcement part is the big part. If you're not teaching and reinforcing, your culture's not going to change. If you're retaliating against people because they reported, then it's a bit, that's a whole other crime. And that is often what has happened. Anyway, in my research, I found this document and I put it in our blog, and I want to do this called A Gentleman's Guide to Rape Culture, and it has some bullet point list examples of rape culture. And this is a bullet point list for men, but in our industry, a lot of the women need to hear this because a lot of you women are perpetuating this rape culture. Here's the bullet point list. Blaming the victim. She asked for it. Trivializing sexual assault. Boys will be boys. Sexually explicit jokes. Tolerance of sexual harassment. Inflating false report statistics. Publicly scrutinizing a victim's dress, mental state, motives, and history. Gratuitous gender violence in movies and television. Defining manhood as dominant and sexually aggressive. Defining womanhood as submissive and sexually passive, and pressure on men to score, pressure on women not to appear cold, assuming only promiscuous women get raped, assuming that men don't get raped or that only weak men get raped, refusing to take rape accusations seriously, teaching women to avoid getting raped instead of teaching men not to rape. So rape culture is in all of our society. We hear people doing this, both men and women, frequently in our industry. So one of the solutions is educating our industry that, and you don't have to educate everybody in the industry, because I've heard men say the following to me. Even if a woman was walking down the street buck-ass naked, that is not an invitation to have sex with her or rape her or assault her. So you either were taught right or you were not taught right. Now, which one are you? This article goes on. Again, this is called A Gentleman's Guide to Rape Culture that I feel a lot of women need to read. So this writer says, now that you know what it is, what can you do about it? Avoid using language that objectifies or degrades women. Speak out if you hear someone else making an offensive joke or trivializing rape. If a friend says she's been raped, take her seriously and be supportive. Think critically about the media's messages about women, men, relationships, and violence. Be respectful of others' physical space, even in casual situations. Always communicate with sex partners and do not assume consent. Define your own manhood or womanhood. Do not let stereotypes shape your actions. So they have a couple suggestions here. Men can confront men. Men can correct men. Men can make other men, STFU. I think we all know what that means. And it's our job to have standards for ourselves and thus for all men. These little 4 points that I just went, he elaborates in the article, but a lot of it is, you know, you lead by example. So if you're leading by showing your younger men under you that this is how you treat women, then they think, well, that's how you treat women. If you're a woman and you're bashing other women about women, how they dress, and saying that they deserve to get raped because of that, there's 80-year-old ladies that have been raped while they were going and checking their mail. You know, I'm happy to see Elizabeth Smart is coming out and talking about this topic of these women that are bashing other women, because they're really the ones that have a problem, in my opinion. They really need to get an education. So we have a couple guests that are going to join our show that have had either firsthand experience or recent experience that I wanted to come on and talk about this. Going back to what I just said about this, we need to teach the women in our own industry how to act right. We have this other organization who is supposed to be the leader, who has been victim blaming from day one, but at the same time being an opportunist and trying to make money off the problem on the other side, not really doing anything significant about it, not dumping any sponsors that she has that have ongoing litigation against them, still taking their money, still helping them keep it all under wraps. In the meantime, this company, CRST, the other day when I was Googling, has a new sexual harassment policy up on Google in a paid advertisement. They're making their sexual harassment policy public for all to see with an ethics line available. This is really new. I mean, this company has been in litigation for sex assaults since I got into this industry 10 years ago. And Ellen has not wanted to come out and do anything about it and just dump them. Just say, you know, you can't be, you got all these high profile lawsuits. You can't be in our, she could never do that. She wanted to cover it up. She wanted to make excuses. She wanted to say that the women just wanted to be in a lawsuit. And then, you know, at the same time, trying to make money by getting a grant to do a driver crisis line, so they report to her. It's very sinister. So when I'm looking at her response to the 2020, it is a complete victim blaming blog post that is almost hysterical when you read it. So this person is supposed to be the leader of a women's advocacy organization leading the charge to victim blame and attack other women and marginalize their experience while at the same time trying to make money off of it. So it's really mind-blowing to me that this could be going on and nobody says anything about it. They'll say something about the ATA. They realize the ATA is not out for the drivers, but for some reason, well, there's a lot of people that are aware, but they don't do enough to stamp it out. Let me tell you, since Women in Trucking came into existence, CRST has had thousands and thousands of complaints for sexual harassment against them. And in the court documents of Sellers versus CRST, a fraction of them have been investigated, like 300 investigated. Thousands. I mean, that's at one company, people, and you are not hearing about it. So if she's the person you're supposed to be going to when you're having problems and thousands of women have been harmed, who are they reporting it to? Well, I know they're reporting some of it to us, which is part of the post that we put on our blog to let some of the emails be published that we get. We've got hundreds of them just in our website alone. We've got hundreds of them in our Facebook
page. We can go back to that road
it
told me to turn on, that Harley Road.
That's,
okay.
That's Idella. That's okay.
I apologize. I thought I had myself muted. I'm back on mute.
So, the first solution is everybody needs to be educated that this is going on. It has been going on. There has been a movement to silence it. There has been a movement to make people marginalize it, speak only positively of the industry, and conceal that people are being heard. That's not how you educate people and get them prepared for an industry, by concealing that some people are being hurt in the industry. That's how you set them up for failure. That's how you create naive women who go in with blinders on and don't understand that this could happen. Now, it doesn't happen to everybody. There's a lot of people that nothing's happened to them, and then they learn about it later. So, all right, I've rambled enough. I want to welcome onto the line a couple guests. I asked a couple people to come on. One is going to be on an airport layover, so when I see her number come up, I'm going to open up her line. But I know that Sheree is on the line from She Trucking. We talked a little bit the other day because, well, she's a member of Real Women in Trucking. We're so glad to have her. A lot of you know her from her She Trucking apparel. She's a driver, and she's an entrepreneur. She has this line, and she's going to tell you more about it. But she's had a couple of incidents recently that kind of opened her eyes that maybe we don't know everything about what's going on. I mean, let's be honest. We have a job where we're in a different place every day. So how can you possibly think that you have your finger on the pulse of this industry? So you learn from others, and you learn from communicating. So I'm going to open up her line right here. Let's see if I did it right. Sheree, can you hear me? Let's see here. Sheree?
Hello?
Hi. Okay.
Hello.
I got you.
Thank you for having me. How you doing? I'm fine.
Oh, I'm doing good. So where are you at?
I'm actually in Ohio. I'm getting ready to pick up a load and take it to Georgia, and then I'm on my way home. So I've been out here for a month. It's time to go home.
Oh, man. I can't do a month anymore. I did a month and a half after Christmas, and I was like, I got to go home. I want to go home. Tell us about yourself and driving and She Trucking and what's going on.
Well, I've been driving for 4 years. I am an over-the-road driver for American Central Transport. I started a clothing brand called She Trucking Apparel. It's for women truck drivers to get, you know, be able to express themselves, you know, to be recognized into the industry.
So you have a Facebook group.
Yes. I started a go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Tell us about your Facebook group and how you started it.
Well, I started the Facebook group called Sisterhood Helping Empowerment and Transportation. I started it because I had a lot of people, you know, getting their apparel and stuff like that, and a lot of women coming and asking a lot of questions. And so it became more than I ever imagined. Topics that I wasn't aware of, you know, has came from the group. we have been graduating a lot of the ladies and that's coming into the industry, bringing more women into the industry as well. Getting a message out about other services like, and organizations like Real Women in Trucking, which is a great organization to be a part of. Just bringing attention to, different things in the industry. So.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of how Real Women in Trucking started. I was a driver. I was having problems. I wasn't getting satisfaction from solving my problems at my company. So I wrote for help to whatever was in existence at that time, which was Alan and Donna Smith's Ask the Trucker website and the newly formed Women in Trucking organization. Alan and Donna replied. I never got anything from Women in Trucking until it escalated further. All of that history is on my Trucker Desiree blog. The Facebook thing didn't come till almost a couple years later, but I did do the YouTube. I think maybe after a year or so I had a YouTube, and the YouTube was getting so much people writing me for help, men and women. It was nonstop. I mean, I never had a moment to myself, and I couldn't say no because some of the situations were very urgent, and it was hard because I was trying to drive. I was only making like $300 or $400 a week myself, living in my truck. I was still homeless, and it was overwhelming, and I'm like, why isn't anybody helping all of these people? Like, they don't have anyone to ask for help. And you sometimes just gonna go, I can't do this. It's too much for me. But then you get a message that's so urgent. You have to do something. You have to do something. Tell us about your experience.
Well, recently I was approached with a situation. One of our lady drivers reached out. She had been abused, so which we didn't know in the beginning. Once we got there, she had been physically abused. She also had her two children that was in the truck, and so she was asking for us to help her find a way from Miami, Florida, up to Dayton, Ohio. So, and we did. We helped her, sent the driver down to help her get back from Miami to Dayton, Ohio. Everyone was safe. We made sure that she was taken care of, which brought, to my attention that there is a problem for, women do need a safe haven out here. They need a number to call or something. I feel like that it's time for us to create a safe haven for all women. I thank you for giving us a voice to be able to speak about these issues and being that voice for a long time. So, I reached out to you because I actually had a situation where I was at the truck stop and it was a man that was, verbally harassing me, from another truck driver that was from another company of J.B. Hunt, which I actually reached out to them and told them my problem. Nothing was done about it. So, there's a lot of things that women out here face. My advice to a lot of women is, get in your truck, make sure your door is locked. If you have a problem, call 911 for now until we can get a solution and get this resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've tried to talk about safety, but we have, archives, we have blog posts, we have YouTube shows on both of our channels, both my personal one and and the one for the organization. But, every week hundreds of new people are entering. I mean, if you went to a place like I went to, 100 people every Monday, new ones. That's at one carrier, at one terminal. So we're talking about thousands of new people every week who are entering this industry who don't know anything about what they're getting into. All they know is what the recruiter told them, that they're going to be making $45,000 a year in the first year and everything's going to be hunky-dory and it's just going to be like their ticket to the middle class and all of this stuff. But the truth is the first year is hard. It's super hard.
It is.
And if you don't have a support system or you don't have anybody to call, it's scary and it's frightening. And anything can happen to you. If you've ever met anyone, I had to take two or three Greyhound bus rides across the country when I was a student, you know, from bad situations with co-drivers. And the whole bus was truck drivers leaving one company, going to another company, or had to get off the truck from a trainer or a co-driver and was trying to get back to a terminal to get reseated on another truck. Like, the whole back of the bus, I'm like, this is a big thing. Like, they have a deal going on with Greyhound, obviously, because that's most of their passengers is, you know, dislocated truck drivers. And the stories there, you know, meeting people that were like, they got an advance just to get the ticket, but they didn't have enough money for the food. They didn't have enough money to get their other bag onto the thing, onto the bus. They brought an animal, and then the animal had to stay behind in the animal shelter that they never got to go back for. These are things you should know, but how do you get all of this information out when you have these big organizations? It's like, let's just talk about the good stuff. Let's not talk about it, about any of the bad stuff. The bad stuff is how you prepare. That's how you,
right,
you know, think ahead. Okay, what can I do? And people call me up and they say, can I bring a gun? No, don't bring a gun. You know, even at Covenant, you bring a knife, you're going to get fired. Somebody finds out you got a weapon, they're going to fire you. But you could maybe have some bug spray. You could maybe make sure that your phone is a smartphone, not a flip phone. Because when I started, it was flip phones. Smartphones were new and not very many people had them.
A tire thumper is good to have.
So many little things. So communicating between us and having a safe haven where we can talk and not get shouted down and have this bullying going on where, you know, well, I've been out here this much and I never did it. And I hold myself like this. Well, you know, I mean, you're lucky. Okay. So just leave it at that, but don't marginalize somebody else. So with this lady, her situation that got a hold of you, and what I was telling you too, and everybody that's listening needs to know this, we have to communicate between these pages. There's people that contact you that might not contact me. And
right,
there's people that might contact me that want to find you. And we had an incident a few weeks ago where we had a woman that had been kicked off of a lot of different pages. And then she came to our page and apparently started doing some of the same things on our page that got her kicked off the other pages. But we didn't know until afterwards. And, I mean, I could kind of sense there was something more there. People that have repeat problems in other areas, I mean, it comes back. It doesn't take long for, I always say people, they have a 2-week shelf life. They're only going to have their good manners on for 2 weeks. Then you're going to see what you're really dealing with. In trucking, when you're actually living with that person in a small space, it can get very, very difficult quickly. So when you're seeing this on the Facebook pages, we can't help everybody. We can't, because there is a very low barrier to entry in CDL training in these truck driver fleets. And some of the people are not cut out for this job. And they're coming to the industry because they have run out of chances in a lot of other places in their life. And I feel bad because a trainer is going to deal with that person. And it's not going to end up good. I don't know the solution to that problem, because the solution for that problem lies in the carriers who are not filtering students who need extra help or who just simply do not have the aptitude for this work at all. They just are coming here because they're getting lured here with a lot of empty promises.
So, Sheree, what else do you want to share with us about that experience that you had?
Well, the blessing out of it was that, you know, I went to my company, which is ACT, American Central Transport, and I let them know that I was having, you know, the problem that I had, and they actually had my back. And that meant a lot to me. When you find a carrier that, you know, have your back in situations that are good carriers, you know, you tend to work harder for them. You know, you want to stay with them longer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really made a difference, because a lot of companies, they turn their back on you. I've heard many situations where you bring an issue up and it's just, you know, shushed away or swept up under the carpet, as they used to say. But actually, my carrier actually spoke on it, and, you know, they was on my, you know, had my back in the situation, which I really appreciated. You know, I tell people, always come out here and save money. Like, save as much money. Don't come out here. Everybody think you come out here, you got to, you know, put the best rugs in your truck or the best bed in, you know. You don't come out here and do that. You come out here and you build you a fund to be able to fall back on. Because if you get into a situation, you're going to need that money to be able to get yourself out of that situation. You're going to need that money to be able to just maintain when the freight goes down, because, you know, it's an up and down cycle. So, I always tell people, save as much money as you can. I don't care if you put it in the shoebox up under your bed or whatever, you know, but you need to be prepared, you know, and that's very important, preparation in this industry. So.
Yes. There are, we put an FAQ on our website, because we had so many people writing us about the same questions over and over. And I used to just write an individual response to every single person. And over the years, it just became really taxing to do that. So when I wrote the FAQ, I tried to cover as many areas as possible. And a big one is, do have a little emergency fund, because it's very likely that you will not have just one trainer. It's very likely that you'll go through two or three trainers for various reasons. The trainers do for their own home time in the middle of your training, and you don't want to sit around, or they get sick, or they're going on vacation, or it doesn't work out, or the truck broke down. I mean, there's so many different reasons. I mean, I know a trainer put the student off because she got a cold and didn't want to catch the cold, so he left her at a motel like 2,000 miles from home over the Christmas holidays, and nobody else would come and get her because they didn't want a student over the holidays. There's all kinds of things that can happen. So you have to tread lightly in the first few months and pack lightly, travel lightly, and have the money in the pocket for, you know, even right now, 10 years into this, and I'm an owner operator, I have my dog and I have stuff in the truck. If something happened, like what I mentioned earlier in the show, where we had to jump out from a fire, I've got to be able to rent a car or get a motel room, call for help, and have a phone that works. And I've been in situations where they didn't. So new students, there's so much reading that you should be doing preliminary before you get on the Greyhound and go to your orientation center to think this stuff out, aside from the other things that can happen. If anybody has a question that's on the line, if you press 1, I will see that you want your microphone open. I was waiting for Mary and Daphne to call, and I don't see their phone numbers on the panel right now, but if they're calling from a different number, they can do it. Let me go back to this part where I wanted to mention that in the Diane Sawyer story, they talked about the rape that came up. I think a lot of us may have seen this. It came out on one of the CDL blogs. It came up in my Google alerts. And basically, the driver got caught at the port of entry in Utah. He got stopped for a random, you know, they bring you in the scale. Sometimes they're just doing like making everybody come in and bring their paperwork to look at your bills and, you know, just check and make sure your insurance is good. And they get your CDL and they put it in the computer. Well, his came up that he was wanted for a rape and he was working for Watkins Shepherd. Well, 7 months earlier, he raped a student at CR England in Utah. That's why the warrant was in the system. So we had sent that to the ABC people. Like that was a, you know, it's like that happened to come up about a few weeks after they first contacted us and I sent it to them. But what people miss about that is that this guy was a trainer for CRST, or I'm sorry, I take that back, CR England in Utah. He was a trainer at CR England. And he raped this girl, this female student, and she reported it to the police. He raped her apparently on the CR England property. How was he able to leave? She reported it to the police right away. How was he able to leave CR England's property and go get another job at Watkins Shepherd, owned by Schneider National, and get a verification of employment? This has to be part of the solution. How are you letting somebody that you know raped one of your students get a verification of employment at another training carrier? Why does an experienced driver go from training carrier to training carrier? They don't pay very much. You go to a training carrier to learn how to drive a truck, and then you go get a job at a better experience level carrier where you're going to make more money. Why would you stay working at a training carrier? I don't understand that. Like, put two and two together. And why would you go from one to the other unless that's your way that you hunt for people? So these fleets, they have got to start being a little bit more proactive. CR England knew they had a rapist. They just let him disappear back into the population. We don't know if he was a trainer before he was at CR England, and he went there afterwards. We don't know how long he worked there. We don't know if he was training at Watkins Shepherd, because they did used to train, and they probably still do. There's a lot of stuff that we don't know about this guy, and there's a lot of other guys just like him out there. And the industry conceals it from us, therefore making somebody like this woman, she reported it right away. That's great. It doesn't always happen, though. A lot of women don't report it right away because they feel stupid and ashamed that they got on to the truck with somebody and didn't see. You always, hindsight's 20/20. Later, you always are like, I should have noticed that. I should have noticed this. What was I doing? Why didn't I? You beat yourself up. But there's a lot of stuff that the industry is doing to put you in that situation. They know a lot more than they're saying about this. We have to hold them accountable. I have often said that a big part of the solution is if you cannot accommodate the number of students you recruited this week with safe trainers, you shouldn't be hiring them. There should be a cap. There should be an exit interview. And if any of us remember when you had your first year of trucking, you had to fill out a paper that goes to the FMCSA that says, did you get any citations or accidents or anything during the year? They do a data collection at the end of the year. the volume of people that leave entry-level driving in the first year is huge, and there should be exit interviews of why they left, because a lot of those people got federal money and state grants to fund them coming into this industry. So if there's no return on the investment from the taxpayers on all of these people, why do you keep paying these same carriers all that money to train people when their return on investment of qualified drivers that made it through their first year is significantly low? They are not doing a good job of training. All right. I think that Daphne is on the line right now. She went to a training carrier, and let me see if this is Daphne. And Sheree, your microphone's open. If you have a question or comment, just interrupt me, because I will just talk until the cows come home.
Well, I just want to thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you responding to me when I reached out to you. That was just, you know, very awesome. I appreciate that. I just want to encourage women to ask questions. When you come into this industry, you can ask us anything. Ask questions. Ask your fleet manager questions. Ask your trainer questions. Get to know that trainer before you get into that truck. And I just hope that more women become trainers, because we then can take care of each other. So on that note, right, I'm going to get up the road because it's kind of rainy, but I'm going to continue to listen in if that's okay.
All right. That sounds good.
Okay.
Right.
And thank you so much. And if anyone is interested in the apparel, the website is shetrucking.com. So thank you so much.
All right. All right. You be safe out there.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Daphne. Daphne, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey. How are you?
Hey. Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So I've been talking here for a bit and talking about the show. I don't know if you got to see it or not. Let me ask you, first of all, did they ever contact you?
No. Oh, what show are you talking about? Because I talked to, like, three different people.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I think I sent you different. Yeah. Your email to me asking to get in contact with somebody came about the same time that the ABC show first got in touch with me. And I just wrote you yesterday to ask you to come on this show. And basically we were discussing the Diane Sawyer program that aired, because the reaction we've been seeing from other women drivers is really malicious and disappointing. It is not the same for the waitresses and the maids. Just it's one industry, and it's very troubling. So I know I had sent you the number of a couple different people that were doing different film and television projects and stuff, but did the people from ABC ever get a hold of you?
They did, yes.
Okay, okay. Do you want
to
talk
to
a little bit about... Okay.
Sure. About my situation? Or my encounter? Sure, that's fine. I had been a medic for about 17 years and decided to go into trucking because my cousin does it, and my son, he has his CDL, but he doesn't go over the road. But so I went through a well-known trucking school, got my CDL, got hired right out of school, went to the place that they were telling me, got a trainer after about 10 days, and the next 3 weeks were absolutely horrific, as far as sexual harassment, degrading vocabulary, the whole experience really was sort of life-altering. I'm still in the midst of it, honestly, but as far as a lawsuit goes and all that stuff, so.
Were you able to find a lawyer?
I've talked to several different lawyers. I haven't had any luck getting anybody to take it. Each one I talk to tells me not to give up because I do have a case. It's just, you know, it's hard to find one.
Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know if you want to talk about details because you are going to do a pending litigation, so I didn't know how that was going. This event
I think
happen,
details
or...
are fine as long as names don't get thrown out. No, I don't mind going back through that.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
What were you going to ask? I didn't want to.
Well, what I was
going
to say is.
2 or 3 second lag in between us talking.
Yeah. What I was going to say is when you wrote your first email to us, it was basically that you wanted to get a hold of a lawyer because you had seen our lawyer Q&A that we held at GATS with Stephen Aronson. And
right.
So you didn't tell a lot about what happened, but we were glad that the lawyer Q&A, even though the event, we wanted to talk about sexual harassment, but when we got there, nobody wanted to talk about sexual harassment. They wanted to talk about drive inward facing camera and all this other, they wanted to talk about
right.
all this other stuff. And,
right.
But Steve Aronson, he's a big, big deal. And anybody that listens to what he says in those videos, you could tell he knows his stuff. So you saw the video with him and wrote about that, and then we talked on the phone. So your incident happened at Werner. So go ahead and tell us what you can about what happened.
I had initially put in for a female driver or female trainer, and there's so few of them that after 10 days of waiting after my training, my initial training, you know, your didactic part, classroom part, I had opted to get a co-ed driver, trainer. So when I did that, about 2 days later, a gentleman showed up. He presented himself pretty well, well-spoken, you know, had reservations about being out in the world, really, with somebody I didn't know, and so anyway, I decided to take him as a trainer, and about 2 days out, our second day out, things just started going crazy. He would sit in the front of the truck in his underwear. His genitals were out. He would say vulgar things about women, about me, about his wife. He would make explicit, tell explicit stories about his encounters with women over the road, generalizations about women, how I could get done with training faster, if there was any kind of favors, if he didn't like me or if I didn't do what he wanted me to do, he would have no problem putting me out on the side of the road, anywhere. He didn't have to take me any certain place, just put me out on the side of the road. From that, it was in the back of the cab. We had a sleeper. Of course, we were doing, you know, teaming. Him barely dressed in the bed, not covered up, when I'm, you know, coming in after getting a shower or whatever and trying to get in the top bunk, it was just very awkward, scary, really, because I've never been in that kind of situation. And like I said, pretty much life-altering. I've never been in that kind of situation. I've always been guys.
You're kind of fading out with a little bit. Are you walking away from your phone?
Hang on. No, I think my headset's going dead. But
oh,
can you hear me now?
Yeah.
But from, you know, we went to hotel rooms when, you know, and Werner, or, you know, Werner would get us a separate rooms, of course, but then, you know, he would make situations where he had to come inside my room, and that's one of the arguments that we had, because I refused to let him inside my room. He just, if he would get in arguments with his wife on the phone, and then, you know, of course, take it out on me from, you know, I've never screamed at, but I was during this part, you know, during this part of my life, this guy screamed at me like I was, you know, 12 years old. I'm a 48-year-old woman. I've, you know, had a career already. This is my second career. You know, I have a formal education, a degree, and now I'm getting treated like I'm an idiot by this guy, getting degraded daily, berated about women, berated about any decision I made, or down to coffee, you know, what kind of coffee I like to drink. It was horrific, honestly.
Oh, God. So when you had the breaking point, did it get into a physical situation?
No, he I was afraid. Now, I was afraid. He did kind of get in my face, but he never put his hands on me. At my breaking point, he was 2 inches from my face screaming, and I just had enough. And I was at a terminal in Dallas, and I just grabbed my stuff and threw it off the truck, and I was like, I'm done. I can't take another second. Life is too short. And I got off the truck. And I immediately went to my driver liaison and got another trainer.
So in the beginning, I mean, when you were reporting this to Werner, what was their position on it? I mean, were they like very proactive? Did they?
Honestly, they were more worried about, because he had alcohol in the truck. And they were more worried about that, because, you know, they're liable for that. They're, you know, my license and his license were in jeopardy just for having alcohol in the truck. You know, there's a zero tolerance policy for alcohol and commercial driving. That's more of their concern right then. That was it. Anything else I was telling them.
So your personal safety was just, you know, did they say anything that, you know, maybe you should do this, maybe you should do that? They have any advice or solutions for you?
Not at all. They assured me that it would be taken care of, and then it was brushed under the rug. I was told if I see him at a truck stop or if I see him at a terminal, that I'm just to not speak to him, ignore him, and he was instructed to do the same.
I just opened Idella's mic because she said she had a question. But what you just said, I hear a lot from women that report to us. The person is not fired. They're just not supposed to talk to each other anymore if they see each other. But then it turns out everybody knows. And you feel kind of humiliated that this person was able to do all of this stuff to you, and they just go on about their business.
Absolutely, and go to do it to another female.
They do it.
You know, there's this huge push for females to be go into trucking now, because research and statistics tell us that women are safer drivers. They get less accidents and they get less tickets. They're more courteous. Because this is a, you know, personally, I know the damage, being a medic for 17 years, I know the damage that these vehicles can do to a human being or a car, and I'd never want to be the responsible for hurting anybody. So, in my situation, I'm a lot more careful than most people are, because I've seen what they can do. You know, not just in videos on YouTube, firsthand, I've seen what they can do. And I think women are more compassionate and empathetic as far as, you know, nobody, women are nurturers anyway. We don't want to hurt anybody, so we're more cautious.
I know what you're saying about the, with the, when I got off the truck in a blur, I was was in the face of this co-driver that I had. We got into it, one of them. I had a couple different situations. I got off the truck because my hands were shaking so bad, I couldn't shift anymore. I was so mad.
Yeah. Oh, I've had
and
panic
I
that,
knew.
Yeah, I understand.
I couldn't be a safe driver on the road with him in the truck with me, because I was so pissed off that
right.
he pushed me to the point that we were, you know what I mean? Like, he was trying to intentionally intimidate me.
Absolutely.
And I wasn't
absolutely.
Backing
Mine
down.
Did the same thing.
Mm. Yeah, I wasn't backing down, but it was affecting my body, you know, that I didn't have control of myself.
Right, right.
And I'm operating this piece of machinery that could do damage to myself and others. And so without my company support, it was time for me to say, I have to exit this situation right now for the safety of everyone, including myself.
Mm-hmm. I completely understand.
So, Idella, your mic is open. Go on ahead.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I heard you say because, and I do have a question, because you said he never put his hands on you and this, that, and other thing. When you reported all these situations and all these incidents, did they ask if he had? And if your answer was no, did they say, well, what are you complaining about? Did you get that attitude? Now, they may have not said those exact words, but did you get the attitude because nothing ever came to fruition? What are you complaining about? Did you get that attitude?
I did, yeah. Like
okay,
I said,
well,
they kept kind of going back towards, well, how much alcohol? When were the times that he drank? Where did he buy it? You know, stuff like that. And I'm thinking.
So they were worried,
you know,
about their liability, and you weren't considered a liability.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, the only thing I'm saying is because the complaint that I had, because nothing ever actually came to fruition, well, what are you complaining about? What's the problem?
Right.
It's just words. Well, mm-hmm. that can be just as debilitating. Abuse, verbal abuse, can be just as debilitating as getting beat up. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I was just concerned. But you still got marginalized. They just weren't interested that you had a problem. Don't talk to them. Excuse
right.
me. I have mm-hmm. a problem with that. Okay, that was the question I had. Thank you.
Well,
yeah,
I'll leave your mic open if you still, you know, I didn't want to, I knew you were trying to get some
myself.
Stuff done.
We're back into the dock and getting loaded, so I'll mute myself so that my dog doesn't bark and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
No, I promise you, if he just put his hands on me, I was a boxer for 3.5 years, an amateur boxer when I was in my 20s. It'd have been like feral cats in this thing if he'd put his hands on me. Because I'm going to protect myself, and I think as women we have to put off that sort of body language to say, you know, I can't be, you know, of course men are much stronger than we, and they can overtake us if the will is there. I think my body language is like, don't touch me. You know, I didn't
mm-hmm.
touch him. I didn't brush up against him. I didn't, you know, I did everything I could do to give him his space.
Mm-hmm. But it, like, we had a self-defense class on our cruise, and we talked about this, and I have some first-hand experience with it as
yeah.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's
mm-hmm.
the first one that touches who is the one that's going to jail.
Yeah.
So he gets up in your face, and he's 2 inches from your face, and you feel like he's going to do something, and you decide to hit him, you're going to jail.
Right.
And sometimes
don't want to lose your job, don't want that on your record.
Yeah,
and, you know,
right. That's now on your record that you got fired from a job for fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to like really think this out. When I see some of these, well, I would do this and I would do that. I'm like, okay, yeah, but then now you don't have a job, and you're not going to get hired anywhere else. And you know, unfortunately, some of that stuff does stay with you. So this guy that was the rapist over at CR England, he's running around getting rehired. But I've met women that's like my past manager just told gave my verification of employment that I made terroristic threats against them because I told him he was an asshole when I left.
Right.
You know, and that's on their record, terroristic threats. Nobody's going to hire you for that if you got that. If that's your verification of employment, that's not going to help you at all. So you do have these other things that you got to like think about very quickly before you make any of these decisions of how you want to protect yourself in. You are isolated. I want to talk about this claim that Ellen made and this makes me very angry because ever since I first appeared in this industry and started questioning some of the ways this stuff goes down, her response is to collect the content of stuff that I've said and then claim that she's making a solution, and then everybody gives her accolades in the industry, and then nothing ever happens. The very first time that we saw that was when the Dan Rather program came out, Queen of the Road, when Dan Rather interviewed me about my truck driver training experience. And the Trucker Magazine, the little newspaper they give out at the truck stop, they had how the ATA blasted Dan Rather for making all these false claims and disgruntled worker, me disgruntled, Tom Hansen disgruntled, you know, CRST's innocent, Covenant's they're innocent. And then Ellen over in the corner talking about how she's going to make a white paper to solve all of the ills of the industry. And, you know, and then of course she put on her saying that she thought it was one of the most unfair and biased pieces of the ATA she'd ever seen or some baloney like that. Somebody called her and told her to take that down. But there was a screenshot made of it. That white paper never materialized. That was like almost 10 years ago. At the time, we were in talks with her, Donna Smith, myself, Tracy Livingston, a few others were exchanging emails and giving her a lot of free information, hoping she, because she really did have the power to actually do something, to make a white paper and lead the charge to have a sexual harassment policy for the industry. Years later, she came up with this anti-harassment policy that's free to corporate sponsors. So it's not free because it's not available to the public. It's only available to the certain level of paying corporate sponsors. So it's not free at all, and there's no guarantee that they're going to ever use it or enforce it or do anything, and nobody's ever seen it. I don't know of anyone that's ever actually seen this document. She says she did it with J.J. Keller. I'd be willing to bet money in Las Vegas there's a lot of plagiarized content in there that she got from all this free material that all of us gave her. So having this anti-harassment document that talks about like it's some kind of holy grail that nobody's seen was kind of the beginning of the problem. In the Diane Sawyer, she says, well, we're working on an alarm system, and it's some of the carriers are testing it. So we sent a tweet over. I'm going to try and put you on speaker here so I can look at the tweet. We wanted to question that because she's known for making a lot of claims of stuff that is half the truth or a fraction of the truth. And then when the dust settles, nobody ever calls her on it and said, that was a lie, false information. Where is it? Let's have some evidence to support it. So the tweet was basically about the, what is this? I'm trying to find it now. What is this alarm system you mentioned on the show? And it looks like they deleted it now. But anyway, they said Peterbilt announced an alarm system at our conference as a future option. Okay, so when you start sorting this out, when you go on national television and say, we're working on, well, we're getting the gov, they're getting the government involved. Why do you want the FMCSA, who Ellen has apologized, been a corporate apologist and covered up all of this stuff? She's been in Washington, D.C. for the last 10 years, hasn't said a peep about any of this. Now all of a sudden the FMCSA and her are working together to solve the problem. The FMCSA that's given special training waivers to CRST, like they're not aware. They're giving them special treatment. The ATA has the CRST guy. He's a chairman of the ATA. I mean, they're all like helping each other out. And now they're going to be working together on sexual harassment. So that is very problematic right there, that these groups are working together saying they're solving a problem when they've been the one that's been keeping the problem under the carpet this long. Why is a federal agency working with them on that at all? And then number two, the claim about this, there's an alarm system. Well, then we find out on Twitter it's Peterbilt. That's the claim anyway, to an alarm system. The truck's not stationary. So Diane Sawyer asked, is it going to go to the police station or what? You know, an 18 carrier, she said, is testing it now. I haven't heard of anybody say they've heard one thing about this. And so what? Peterbilt. So do you drive a Peterbilt, Daphne?
No, I have a Volvo.
Okay, so do all of us have to get a Peterbilt truck so that we are safe in our bunk? I mean, you know, what if you work for a fleet with 3,800 trucks and you got a Volvo and I got a Freightliner and somebody else has a Kenworth and then your truck breaks down and you and your trainer have to go get into a truck that doesn't have a panic button, then what? And then that's the night that you get raped. That happens. That stuff happens. Some of these rapes have happened when the truck was broke down and you got put in a motel or whatever. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Idella.
No, excuse me. And I've seen in my situation, and I won't tell all about that, the gal sitting next to me and she has to sit up. And if anything happens, she has a panic button. Well, we were in a populated area and pushes the panic button because the truck is being assaulted, not necessarily her. And I'm saying, okay, what good does that do? Excuse me, they're 10 minutes out, they're 15 minutes out, they're 20 minutes out. You're 100 miles away from anywhere. Excuse me? Sorry,
mm-hmm.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it. No, I don't buy it. It's useless.
No. Yeah, I mean, it is.
It might be a solution, but every truck would have to have it, and it would have to hook to every police department. It would have to have a frequency. I'm, wouldn't it be easier just to train these people and get out of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, the attitude that something's always your fault? Let's train them beforehand to know that if you boo-boo and you make an advance, that there's going to be serious consequences. You don't always have to come to fruition with it. Training. Quiet now.
Yeah, no, you're right. When I started, we had the Qualcomm. So a lot of people still have Qualcomm. It was before the ELD. It was, you know, this big old thing that we had the long cord and attached to it. So when and one of the first things that I discovered when I started taking intake reports from women that had been attacked on the truck, I would hear the same thing about this over and over. The Qualcomm had a SOS message way that you could send a message to ask for help. But if you didn't know how to use it and you didn't know how to delete the fact that you asked for help, you could be in bigger trouble. And what I found was a lot of the trainers that were doing abusing the students would not teach you that there was an SOS feature on the Qualcomm. They would take the Qualcomm and pull the cord all the way out of the truck and lock it in the side box so you didn't have access to it when the trainer was sleeping. And the rest of the time, the trainer had their eagle eye on you and didn't let you touch it. They would, they knew how to disconnect the satellite so that you couldn't get tracked. These people that do these things, they set the stage to get you cornered. So if you've got a person that is going to hurt another person, that kind of stuff isn't going to help you. You know, if you've got a predator that works for you, you need to get them out of there. And you don't need to give them a verification of employment to go get employed somewhere else where they're going to have access to more students or vulnerable people. If you feel comfortable hiring somebody that's a sex offender, I personally know that there are some companies that do that. We found one during the Dan Rather. There was a company that they hired fellow sex offenders because they knew nobody would hire them, so they all stuck together. That presents its own set of problems itself. I know everybody has to have a job. I'm not even going to get into all of that conversation, but let's think about this business. It's mobile. It's invisible. If your company is taking the responsibility of employing people like that, knowing the statistics say most sex offenders, they don't get cured. They continue to offend. So what are they doing when they're roaming around, you know, the nation? What are they doing in other people's communities? And why would you put them on a truck with another person? And I know that we don't know that that all of the sex offenders that are out here and among us, but you have a higher standard when you're running a school. You have a higher standard when you're putting a new person that's vulnerable and doesn't know anything on a truck with somebody that you've given them trust and responsibility, and they're representing your company.
It comes down to the point that, and you're using the terminology, predators and victims, because it's not always male and female. I've had several phone calls and emails that the female trainer that they picked, and they can't force you to go male or female. I mean, you know, it's equal opportunity. But that the female was as abusive and ungiving as some of the males. So, you know, it can go both ways. Then you're going to have the ones that the victims that get on there that claim that are victims, that they're using themselves to get through the program and get the money and get out. So it is predator and victim, no doubt. And I think we have to realize that it's not always male-female, female-female, or male-male, that everybody has a problem. All the new people that are coming in are potential victims, male or female.
They are. Anytime you get on a truck with somebody else, anytime you get into a small space with somebody else that's isolated, you don't know that other person, you know. There are cases of women being very abusive to other women. One woman was starving her, like this is when Tracy was still training. She had to go rescue a student that the female trainer was just abusing this student. She'd lost a bunch of weight. I mean, she was petrified. She was traumatized. There are a lot of abusive women who are trainers. There's some really nice women who are trainers, but they're very far and few between. Having a female trainer is not the answer. It is not the solution. Having qualified trainers, having trainers that are training you because they want to put safe drivers on the road. That is the solution. Not getting trainers who have 3 months of experience, who are not making enough money and threatening to quit. And so you say you should become a trainer because then you'll make more money and you make all the miles off the trainer. And then neither one of them know what's going on. You have a trainer that doesn't have enough experience, that might be in it for the wrong reasons, who thinks that they're going to get a female on their truck. I've heard men say that to me. I'm getting on the trainer program so I can get me a female on the truck. That's their only reason they're training, is because they think that they're going to be delivered a woman on the truck to serve them. But you do have some good male trainers as well. And I've seen women students abuse that situation by trying to manipulate it. It does happen. It is a two-way street. So when you have male trainers that have no training on things to recognize about a problem student, if the student's hitting on this trainer thinking they are going to take advantage of the situation as well, the trainer's got to have the training to say, I can't have this student on my truck. I'm going to deliver them safely to a terminal and get another student. And then you have to have a company that backs up your decision to say, we trust you and we are going to take care of the situation right away and handle it. And those are the things that are sort of lost on this industry. Like, they're completely befuddled. How do we solve this? How do we solve this? It all starts at the top and it trickles down into the workplace, because if things are tolerated, the workers see it and they follow suit. That's how it goes. I was hoping that Mary was going to be able to make it in. She is changing flights. Mary, if you're on the line, press 1 and I'll see your hand. I was looking for your cell phone number, but I don't see it. If anybody else has a question or a comment, press 1 and I can open your mic and you can ask a question. We are getting to the last couple minutes of the show. Daphne, I really want to thank you for calling in today. And Sheree, I know you're still listening. Thank you so much
for
calling in and sharing. I really appreciate you taking the time. Idella, I appreciate you hosting with me. I can't wait to see you on the cruise. And we are going to have a show next week. I haven't even told Idella about it yet. We're going to have a show next week to announce the winner of the Queen of the Road Awards. And I just had the suggestion yesterday, and we're going to make it happen. So we hope that you will join us next week. If you have been on social media and you've been seeing Alan and Donna's page about the Denim Amendment, please take some time today, in the next couple days, to call your representative. Tell them to vote no on the Denim Amendment, denim language that is anti-truck driver wage theft language. The ATA has been trying to stick this language into a couple different bills. Over the last couple years, it will effectively close the door on drivers ever getting paid for all of their time and be retroactive for the drivers that have won cases to get their wages restored. Werner's one of the companies that got sued for wage theft, a wage and meal breaks. So call your rep this week, today, tomorrow, before they vote, and tell them to vote no on the denim language in the F4A reauthorization bill. Donna and Alan from Ask the Trucker have it on their Facebook page, the phone number for the Capital Switchboard, and ask for your rep. I want to thank everyone for joining us today, and I hope you'll join us next week when we announce the winners of Real Women in Trucking's Queen of the Road Awards. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day and be safe out there. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is April, and my dad is a professional truck driver for Rennie Transportation in St. Joseph. We have this great passenger program, so over Christmas vacation, I even get to go with my dad in his new super cool lime green semi-truck. Maybe he will let me honk his horn. Honk, honk. Cool. I really love that he gets home weekly so he can spend time with me, mom, and my stinky little brother. I heard my parents talking about how the pay and benefits at Brenny are the best in the industry, whatever benefit means. Oh, and Brenny is a Minnesota top 100 workplace. My dad even won a safety award last year. I want to be a professional truck driver like my dad when I grow up. Listen, I know I'm just a kid, but I'd say if your mom or dad is a professional truck driver like my dad, they better check out Brenny because they care a lot about trucking families. Hey, good buddy, we'll catch you on the flip side. That means see you later in Trucker Talk. Truckers are so cool.
To learn more about driving opportunities, call 363-6999 or visit BrennyTransportation.com.
You're tuned in to the Women Truckers Network, the first trucking radio program hosted by real women truckers. You can learn more about becoming a member at www.realwomenintrucking.org.